Today's July 20th, 2016, and this is episode number 369 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I'm laughing at Jeff. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
I can't imagine why you would be laughing. Also, you're totally justified in laughing because...
I just wish I could repeat what you said right before we started.
You can, but please don't, because I don't want to have to edit the show.
that was a first for me. That was a first for me. If you would like to know what it was that he said, ask one of us in person when there are no tape recorders or video cameras around.
Right. And we both of us will be happy to tell you the story, and it won't even need embellishment.
It's true. I hear the studio cat has something to say about it, too.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot. I need to start introducing Nightshade on the show.
Yeah. You do. So we went to MacStock this last weekend.
We did, and I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was good. It was user conferences most of them were very informative and or entertaining. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really good to see people. What I said, and Chuck Joyner did an interview. We posted the interview on TMO yesterday. We'll put it in the show notes today.
Yep.
Mac stock is not a Macworld replacement by any stretch of the imagination, because Macworld Expo was much more than just a conference. It was a trade show as well, and it was also on a much larger scale. But
right.
What Mac stock does is fill that need that many of us have, that want that many of us have, to get together with other Mac people.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it's not a replacement for Macworld in terms of a conference or show, but it is a replacement for that need for fans of Apple's devices and software to get together, learn more about those products, and be able to hang out with other like-minded people.
I think that's a great way to describe it, and for me, it's a reunion. Every single event that I go to like this, it's a reunion, because there are all these friends and colleagues that we have going back years and years and years. Mm-hmm. That we would hang out with and do things with at events like Macworld, and we kind of lost that, except we didn't, because now we get to have it in a more casual setting. You know, because at Macworld, everything was just going fast, 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 because there was so much for us to do, and it was so big. But we can go to events like MacStock and spend time with our friends, and it's much more laid back, and it just feels really nice.
You know, that's a really good point about the regional shows, because there are other regional shows that have grown in the wake of Macworld's passing. Mm-hmm. Things like MacTech, which is a different kind of show from MacStock, to be sure. Mm-hmm. And there's some other ones out there too, where my point is actually to agree with you. The smaller nature of the show makes it easier to essentially enjoy the whole thing, and really just even enjoy being there. I'm an uptight, high maintenance princess about a lot of things.
But you're our princess.
I am our princess or something. But I mean, I guess my point is that I bring a lot of baggage with me wherever I go about a lot of different things. But I don't think I'm alone in saying that at Macworld, or certainly like CES, which is bigger on a whole other completely different scale, mm-hmm. It's definitely hard to enjoy just being there.
Right. But at MacStock, I was able to enjoy just being there.
Yeah, 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 for sure. For sure. Plus, we found that the Don McAllister can sing. Who knew?
I know, who knew? Oh, I got to ride in a DeLorean.
You did. Someone who was there at Maxock brought his DeLorean, you know, because DeLorean.
Right.
And you got to take a ride in it.
Yeah, that was so cool.
Yeah, it looked like a lot of fun. I was afraid I wouldn't be able to fit, so I didn't take a ride.
No, you could have gotten in.
Okay.
Yeah. And yeah. Yeah, and you would have had a great time. I loved getting to meet in person so many show fans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we met a lot of people. In particular, I had a lot of fun meeting the folks who would say that they, you know, hear us speaking somewhere in the room, and they close their eyes and try to figure out. It's like, I know that voice. Who is that? Oh, yeah, that's Jeff Gamet.
Yeah, yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Definitely, definitely cool. So I can safely say that you should consider MaxDoc next year, MaxDoc 2017, which is in the works right now.
Yeah, I can totally back that up. Yep. And if it falls when they think it will be, it's going to be middle of July. So start planning accordingly. See you there.
Yeah, I am. All right. Now, on a completely different note,
a man with a tape recorder up his brother's nose. You were not expecting a Python reference, were you?
No, the funny thing is that when I said on a completely different note, what I heard in my head was, and now for something completely different.
Oh, well, see, we have this incredibly dangerous mental link.
It's true. It's true. This simpatico. John Chin, CEO of BlackBerry. What the blank is wrong with that guy?
This is going to be really difficult to avoid having to edit part of the show. Can you hear me having to stop and think about the words very closely before they come out of my mouth?
Yes. Yes, I can.
So, Brian, what's up with BlackBerry CEO that has me so bent out of shape?
So the Inquirer reported on this. Apparently, let's see, where were these comments made? I was so focused on the comments.
The Inquirer? Like the National Enquirer? He's been abducted by aliens?
No, the Enquirer that is essentially a ripoff of the Register.
Okay, so the...
Kind of, you know, hack journalism.
Okay.
So wait, did I say that out loud?
Nope.
Excellent. You can usually find some really nasty things about Apple there. This particular story didn't have any things about nasty things about Apple at either the Register or the Inquirer. But this particular piece doesn't have that. It's a piece about John Chin. He's speaking. Where is he speaking? He's speaking. Because it was at BlackBerry Security Summit in New York.
Oh.
And the Inquirer apparently covered that. So
so there was one paper there.
Yeah. Or a website. You know, whatevs.
Or whatevs.
Yeah.
And, anyhow.
Anyway, Carly Page was the reporter. She did an excellent job. She said that he said, quote, "We are indeed in a dark place when companies put their reputations above the greater good." Of course, he's talking about Apple.
Right. He even makes it clear he's talking about Apple by referring to one of their competitors that they call the other fruit company.
Yeah. Yeah. Quote unquote. One of our competitors, we call it the other fruit company, has an attitude that it doesn't matter how much it might hurt society, they're not going to help, he said.
That's a gross mischaracterization of what Apple's doing. But well, carry on.
It's not only a gross mischaracterization of what Apple is doing. He's got some nerve talking about Apple as the other fruit company. Apple was their first, chucklehead. Yeah, your company, your declining company, is the other fruit company.
Well, Death Spiral notwithstanding, I can see why he would want to call Apple the other company, because from his perspective, BlackBerry is one fruit company, Apple is another fruit company.
Right.
Wait, maybe he means Dole.
Everybody's
maybe he means a literal fruit company.
He doesn't. He means Apple.
Okay.
Everybody's the hero of their own story.
That's true.
Right. Right. This is an understood thing, but we call it the other fruit. Oh, man, boy, I mean, it's like you don't even belong in the same room as Apple at this point, man. I mean, the other fruit company. That's just. But also, that it doesn't matter how much it might hurt society, they're not going to help. That's okay. So, as you said, gross mischaracterization of Apple's stance. He further said, quote, "I found that disturbing as a citizen. I think BlackBerry, like any company, should have a basic civil responsibility. If the world is in danger, we should be able to help out," unquote. He added, "Of course, there need to be clear guidelines. The guidelines we've adopted require legal assets, a subpoena for certain data. But if you have the data, you should give it to them," them being the government. And then he said, "There's some complete nonsense about what we can and can't do. People are mad at us that we let the government have the data. It's absolute garbage. We can't do that." And then he goes on to say that the proposed backdoors won't work. So anyway, that's extensive quotes from Carly Page. She, like I said, she did a fine job of reporting that.
Okay, so at least he got the thing about backdoors not working. Right. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. The rest of it, though, is a bunch of utter nonsense. Yeah. Hooey. So I don't know. Shall we like break this down line by line?
It's time for a breakdown. Yes, Brian. Yes. That's what we should do. I think that's a fine idea.
Do I know you? Who are you? What?
No.
Why am I here? I woke up and I'm in a strange place because I'm not here of my own volition, where Jeff Gamet would do that. Anyway, yeah. One of our competitors, he said, doesn't matter how much it might hurt society, they're not going to help. Apple's stance is that it will hurt society by. All right. So first of all, God, this is such selective nonsense.
Let me take a crack at it first,
please,
because I'm afraid that you're going to hurt yourself, Brian.
Yes.
Okay, he's referring to Apple giving the government information that they don't actually have. Apple cannot provide information that they have not collected, so there's that. Also, Apple has worked extensively with government agencies in all kinds of investigations, and they've documented all of this, and they have an entire department devoted to working with law enforcement and government agencies. Apple also has stepped up at other times to help out when they could. Which airline disaster did they help with? Where they were actually trying to find GPS signals or any kind of signal from iPhones out in the middle of the ocean.
The Malaysia one, the one in the Mediterranean?
I don't remember, but it was one of the big airliners that just disappeared and was lost in the ocean a couple years ago. And Apple immediately stepped up and started hunting for iPhones to see if they could help in any way.
Well, Apple also answers subpoenas. When Apple has the data, and Apple is presented with a legal subpoena or a legal warrant, Apple honors it. I mean, this thing, but if you have the data, you should give it to them. Apple does that when legally required to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And to suggest otherwise is a blatant lie. I mean, John Chen is lying by innuendo. He's making it sound like Apple doesn't give the data when it has the data. The thing that Apple refused to do was to create software that bypassed security measures and essentially created a backdoor into iOS.
Right.
That's the thing that Apple refused to do. And Apple said that it did so to protect its customers, to protect users, and in essence, to protect everyone. So right. Characterizing that as no matter how much it might hurt society, they're not going to help, if Apple had actually done what the government would have that was asking, that is the thing that would have hurt society.
Right. So Apple took what I deem to be a very appropriate stance on privacy and security. And it sounds like BlackBerry thinks that that's not a good position to take.
Well, I mean, you know, that's the funny thing is that BlackBerry does some of these things themselves, too. You know, I mean, BlackBerry was into encryption a long time ago.
Right. That's one of the reasons why so many corporations chose BlackBerry. That's one of the reasons why the United States government used BlackBerry for a long time.
Right. And in any kind of situation where there is end-to-end encryption and the company providing the service doesn't hold the keys, that company doesn't have the information. That covers Apple, and that sometimes covers BlackBerry too. So again, to suggest otherwise is, I mean, it's hard to know whether Chaffin's razor says there's missing information here. Either he's crazy, he thinks that we're idiots, he doesn't understand it, or he's trying to make marketing points against Apple, or something.
Yeah, I think we need to know what Mr. Chen's end game is with all of this to be able to sort out why he's saying the things that he's saying. So, yeah. Yes, Chaffin's razor is totally coming into play here because we're missing critical piece of information that would help us understand why he's saying these things.
Yeah, the comments on their own appear irrational. He's probably not crazy. So there's some kind of information. But I honestly suspect he's intentionally misunderstanding the situation in order to, from his perspective, score a blow against Apple.
So it's really just marketing speak where he's trying to make Apple look bad, and then in comparison, BlackBerry looks better.
Yeah, but I mean, but who's actually paying attention? I mean, we do because we're fans of Apple's devices, but I mean, we're part of the echo chamber.
So, okay, that's a really good point. And statements like this don't play well with the echo chamber crowd because we have a broader understanding of what's going on. And I'm assuming that includes the people that he was speaking to at the security summit. So it sounds like his comments then were targeted at the wrong audience.
Well, and the wrong audience doesn't care about this in the first place. The wrong audience isn't paying attention to the subject at all.
That's a good point.
So, you know, again, it's hard to know. It's hard to know why he's saying this and what his endgame is, as you said. It doesn't make any sense. And his assassination by innuendo is, quite frankly, garbage, in my opinion.
I agree. It's leaving a very bad taste in my mouth and has me bent out of shape, as I said.
Makes me glad I'm not a BlackBerry shareholder. I do have a very, very tiny stake in Apple, for full disclosure sake.
Well, Brian, to be fair, there are lots of reasons beyond this to be glad you're not a BlackBerry shareholder.
It's true. It's true. So, yeah, super frustrating and super annoying and there you have it.
Yeah. All right. Well, do you feel better now that we've both vented a little bit about Mr. Chen?
No, I'm cranky.
Yeah.
I'm just cranky.
I feel a little less uptight. I'm not happy. But at least I can string words together without Shatnerian pauses. So that's an improvement from the beginning of the show.
That is, I suppose, an improvement.
Yeah, I think so.
That is an improvement. All right. How about we move on to black boxes?
Okay. I think we can have a reasonable discourse without flipping out. Maybe.
Now, didn't you talk about BlackBerry? No, Black Boxes this morning on TDO?
Yeah. John Martellaro and Kelly Gumont were on, and we talked some about Black Boxes. I wanted to get John's opinion and take this morning. And his take actually leaned more towards how this impacts insurance, which I thought was very interesting. But okay, so I should fill people in because some people may not know what we're talking about. Germany is proposing a law that would require black box recorders be installed in autonomous cars, meaning self-driving cars. And it sounds like those black boxes will be recording when a vehicle is or is not in autonomous mode. But there's no reason why they couldn't be required to record a lot more data. And so that ended up becoming the basis of discussion for TDO today.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm a lot less interested in the insurance side of things and more interested in it from the standpoint of the regulatory side and the practical effects side, the potential for surveillance.
Yeah. These are things that I'm interested in, too.
So the premise at its heart kind of starts with the fact that we are in the early, early days of self-driving vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only a matter of time. I think that we both believe this. But it is only a matter of time before first most cars are self-driven, and eventually all cars are self-driven.
I think that's a safe assumption. It's just a natural progression. I mean, it's like there was a time when most papers were written on typewriters and some were written on computers, and now they're all pretty much written on computers.
Yeah, and you know, there was once a time when someone said, you know, there's going to come a day when all carriages are horseless.
Sure. And except for when you're hanging out in certain parts of the United States with the Amish and Mennonites. Anyhow, yeah, the point is, we live in a horseless carriage era.
Yeah, public. Anyway, yeah. So, so we're heading towards that day. Now, that what they say about futurists is that futurists overestimate the near future and underestimate the far future, or vice versa. I can never remember which, to be honest.
I think the point is that they get their predictions wrong. That's the takeaway I'm getting from what you just said.
Yeah, I'm trying to see if Google is going to. There's a law. It's Amara's Law from Roy Charles Amara.
Oh, no kidding.
Was a researcher, scientist, and this is according to Wikipedia, and as we all know, Wikipedia is always correct.
Yeah, totally infallible.
Was a researcher, scientist, and past president of the Institute for the Future. He also worked at the Stanford Research Institute. Held a BS in management and MS in the arts and sciences and a PhD in systems engineering. So here's Amara's Law. He is possibly best known for a statement paraphrased by Robert X. Cringely, which has become known as Amara's Law. We tend to overestimate the effects of a technology in the short run and underestimate the effect in the long run.
Okay.
Okay, I guess I was close.
Yes, yeah, you were pretty close.
Yeah, Amara's
well
Law. Who knew it actually has a name?
Yeah, it's amazing the things that end up with names. So we have Amara's Law. We have Chaffin's Razor.
Yes, that's going to be big. Chaffin's Razor.
It already is big. People just don't realize that they're employing Chaffin's Razor in the world. Now, our listeners, they totally get it, and they're better people for it.
Right. So we're not going to have a bunch of self-driving cars going everywhere anytime soon. Not in the next 2 or 3 years. We're going to have more cars. cars within some kind of an autopilot function.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not going to see a sizable minority, let alone a majority of cars, be self-driving in, you know, within the next 5 years.
Right.
I think that we're going to see, and this is in part because no one has solved driving in the city yet.
No, that's a big, big project.
Yeah, driving on the highway apparently is a lot easier than driving in the city.
So it seems, although Tesla's had a few issues, but yes.
Well, yeah, Tesla's had a few issues, but...
But we're also, like you said, in the very early stages.
We're in the very early stages of this stuff. I think we're going to see, like, the first area that I think we're going to see a majority of self-driving vehicles is going to be in the trucking business.
I think that's a pretty safe bet.
I think the trucking industry is cannot wait to ditch drivers, because drivers are the biggest insurance overhang for any kind of delivery service, any kind of trucking service.
Well, you can also get product delivered through trucking systems much faster if you don't have humans involved, because humans need to sleep.
Right. They can go. Exactly. They can go 24/7.
Right.
But what's going to happen, my opinion on trucking, is that what's going to happen first is we're going to see points outside of a city and outside of a city, and to and from those points, you'll have autonomous trucks, first with humans in them as a failsafe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can totally see that. And then the over
Teamsters will do their best to have that codified into law.
Sure.
That you keep the human driver in case of emergency. They will be lobbying very, 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 very hard for that. They may or may not succeed.
That'll be interesting to see what happens with that. And I hadn't thought about that, but I think you're right. They will be pushing very hard. And I can understand why. I mean, they are trying to protect jobs.
It's what a union does. And sometimes that's at the expense of progress, or at the expense of efficiency, or at the expense of even right and wrong. But a lot of times it's protecting people from the greed, protecting workers from the greed and overreach of capitalism, which is, I mean, there should always be a tension there.
Sure. Yeah. And without unions, we would not have the far superior working conditions we have today.
Yeah. After the 40-hour work week that we... but most of us take for granted, things like vacation pay and working 5 days a week and 8-hour day. I mean, you know. Anyway, no more rabbit hole in there. I guess my point is that wasn't a dig at the Teamsters, but you could be sure that the Teamsters will be pushing hard to have a human driver codified into law for as long as possible. But so first we'll have trucks going from a point outside. You'll have depots outside of major cities, and inside the city, a human driver will drive a truck. And then outside of the city, from depot to depot, you'll have driverless trucks. And then eventually you won't necessarily need those depots, because trucks will eventually be allowed to be driverless within the city as well. And I think we could start seeing some of those driverless trucks within 5 years. I think it'd be 10 years before we start seeing that become the norm, and somewhere between 10 and 20 years before driverless trucks become a thing from city, from, you know, point to point. That's my guess.
Okay. And I do see the trucking industry moving totally driverless at some point. it just makes sense because it's going to be far more efficient and it has the potential to save a lot of money.
It does. Yeah. And lives.
Sure.
You know, and fuel and, you know, and, you know, imagine being able to have, imagine being able to have trucks. You know how trucks draft off of each other, right? And they do that because so it's one truck gets really close behind another truck, and they're doing that so that the wind the truck that's not in the lead has less wind resistance, and it saves fuel. And you know, sometimes they'll trade places. Is there? It's called drafting,
right? You see bicyclists do it also.
Yeah, but bicycles do it off of each other, and sometimes off of vehicles.
Yes,
off of motorized vehicles or electric vehicles, as the case may be.
I tried doing it off a truck once.
Yeah,
that was kind of scary.
Yeah, I tried doing it on the highway with my on my Vespa, and it was a little outside my comfort zone as well.
I get why there's gray in your hair now.
So. And by the way, for my projections, I'm less confident the further out I get. I'm actually pretty confident in the 5-year framework. I'm a lot less confident on the what's going to happen in from 5 to 10 years and then 10 to 20 years, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, my guess, a lot of that will have to do with how much it costs to actually create a truly autonomous truck.
Right. But there, right. I think that we're going to see a majority of trucks long before we'll see a majority of cars. Could be wrong on that.
All right. So I have a question for you.
Yes.
Would you feel comfortable?
Does it involve me losing my train of thought?
I'm sure I just totally derailed you already. So the core of this conversation is autonomous vehicles, black boxes, recording data. How much data do you think those black boxes in a passenger vehicle should really be recording?
Well, that's the thing. So where this part, where the black boxes enter the story is with Germany. Thanks for getting us back on track.
Oh, sure.
It's like John all over again, but me with the technology and John with insurance.
It's all right. I'm used to this ride. Let's Excellent. Go.
Germany is considering legislation. They're working. So someone somewhere in the German government is working on draft legislation that would require cars with self-driving capabilities, to wit, Tesla with its autopilot feature,
and potentially Apple, whatever their car is.
Which is the majority of the reason why we're talking about this. Mm-hmm. And they would require these, any car with an autopilot capability, a self-driving capability, they would require it to have a black box that would record when the autopilot feature was engaged, mm-hmm. when it was not engaged, when the system recommended that the human take over, and essentially when the human then either did or did not take over.
All right. So it's a system that if I paraphrase this down, would be something that monitors when the autopilot feature is active or not.
Yes.
Okay.
But with the additional detail of when that feature recommended the driver take over.
Sure. Okay. So then the next question is exactly why do they think this is the critical information to record? Is it for data so that cars can be made better? And the autonomous systems can be improved? Is it for liability?
That is a good question. I don't know specifically why Germany is considering this measure. To me, I just kind of took it as, oh yeah, that kind of makes sense. By the way, so a black box is the nickname of the flight recorder that is in most, all commercial airliners. And I don't know how big a plane has to be before it has to have a black box. And it's not black at all. And it's not even a box, but it's nicknamed the black box for some reason. And it's essentially indestructible. And it records flight data. And so black boxes for airlines, airliners cost about $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, they have to survive trauma many orders of magnitude higher than a car black box would need to survive. So we can assume that Germany is not thinking about requiring cars to have a $100,000 black box.
I certainly hope not.
We can just assume that, but it won't cost nothing. You know, it'll cost something like a seatbelt or an airbag did. This will eventually translate into higher prices for consumers.
Of course, because stuff like this doesn't happen for free.
Correct. And it, so, you know, like right now, Tesla is very open about the fact that they're capturing a lot of data from their self-driving cars or cars with autopilot mode.
Mm-hmm.
But that information essentially belongs to Tesla until and when it's subpoenaed by someone or if Tesla chooses to give it up. And of course, Tesla has actually had some accidents lately, including a fatality.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably why this is coming up for consideration in Germany now.
And that makes sense, because it looks like Germany is trying to proactively address the autonomous car push.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it really makes sense from a regulatory standpoint when, you know, because the first several years of having self-driving cars be a thing, because they're not a thing yet, they're just something that happens, right? But once they become a bona fide thing, we're going to spend several years figuring out things like liability.
Sure.
You know, because more people will die. I'm not trying to be morbid. I'm actually trying to be very realistic here. More people will die because we're talking about moving devices on roads.
Right.
And, you know, moving devices, whether or not it's controlled by a computer, those moving devices are still subject to the whims of nature.
The laws of physics.
The laws of physics.
And the stupidity of human drivers.
Right. And or a human bicyclist.
Mm-hmm.
Or a human pedestrian.
Right.
Or
a deer running out in the road.
Right. I mean, you know, things are going to happen. You know, tires will blow. Potholes will occur. Sinkholes will occur. I mean, you know, just on and on and on. People are going to die in the process of figuring out how self-driving cars work. And that means that we're going to spend years figuring out who's liable for what. And by figuring out, I mean, through, you know, the courts. And that's just here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a different process in every single country. We're going to be figuring out, we're going to be spending years figuring out who is not only liable, but who's responsible. Like, you know, who should be regulating what these cars can and can't do? Should it be the companies? Should it be governments?
Yeah, and my guess is that for this to work properly, there's going to have to be a blend of industry regulation and government regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So, but in the meantime, it raises concerns for me, because our government's going to say, okay, yes, all these autonomous cars need to have black boxes. And they need to record everything, not just when the car was under computer control or human control, but how fast it's going at any given time. Where is it at any given moment? When did it turn left, and how fast did it do that? How quickly are you braking?
Can tickets be issued retroactively?
Right. And can this information be hacked? And what sort of privacy issues do we need to deal with there? And will companies be required to hoard all this data about our driving so that it can be turned over to law enforcement or government officials whenever deemed appropriate?
Or worse yet, in my opinion, should these devices just be reporting into some kind of government data collection service live from the, 24/7? That's a scary thought, too.
That's a very scary thought. I mean, I'm already so uncomfortable with the idea of insurance companies putting their own trackers in people's cars that if my insurance company were to try and do that, I would switch companies.
Yes. Yeah, I wouldn't use an insurance company tracker. I at some point, insurance companies, of course, would love to have those be mandatory too. But, and certainly until that day, I will be resisting those things if at all possible.
I put an automatic in my car. It's that little sensor that monitors everything the car is doing. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing the data that I get from my car. But it's also so scary because I'm thinking about what if some government agency said all cars need to have this. Just the amount of data that they would have. They would know my entire life pretty much. It's just scary.
Yes. Check this out.
Okay.
You are a divorce attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Clever divorce attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to prove that your client's spouse has been going to a certain motel or someone's home or wherever.
Mm-hmm.
And that black box has got the data. So you're going to do your darndest to get that so that you can, win a judgment for your client.
Right. So then do you subpoena that from the black box maker?
Yeah, we'll spend years determining who can do that too.
Right. Do you hire some specialist to hack into the black box and get the data out?
That probably wouldn't be admissible in court.
Probably not. But the point is, people are going to try and break into these things.
Yeah, that's kind of a separate issue from the divorce thing. But people will try to hack into these things. And so now, how secure is that data?
Yeah, like, that's a really good question.
So imagine if a governmental agency. Well, let's just go ahead and pretend we'll make it outside the U.S. hacks into your car's black box to put you at a certain time and place so that they can then accuse you of doing something.
That would really suck.
It would be horrible, and it's certainly doable. Of course, the black box is proposed by Germany. I don't think tracks location yet. I don't think that the draft legislation, to our knowledge, doesn't track location. That's not its point.
Okay. And yeah, which then takes me back to my earlier question. What exactly is the point of the black box in this case?
I would assume it's to know.
So maybe, is it just a data gathering tool, or is this for liability? So is this something insurance companies want?
I don't have the answer to that. My gut says that Germany is looking at this as sensible precautionary regulation.
Sure. Yeah. That's then, my guess right now. And that they don't have a grand scheme for how this data is going to be used, but they think it's important that it is logged in some way.
Yes. That's yes. Neither of us know if that's actually the case, mind you.
But we're both intelligent people. We're top men. So, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Top men.
Yeah. Suppose.
Still, I think the fact that it's unclear exactly what's happening with this law says a lot. There's so many vague areas with the autonomous car thing and the data that you can generate with one of these vehicles. I mean, we're in totally new territory right now.
Yeah, these are early days. These are early days. And what's happening right now in reaction to Tesla's ongoing efforts, I don't want to call them experiments, but efforts with its autopilot mode, that stuff is going to affect Apple when Apple eventually enters the car market.
Yes, it will. And you can bet Apple is watching very closely what's happening in Germany and any other country that might have any sort of rumblings about regulations for autonomous vehicles.
Yes. Yeah, so it's it's interesting. We will see what comes of it.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll be watching closely.
We will. So we got to go back to a sort of ugly topic.
All right. I'll do my best to maintain my professional composure.
Okay. All right.
We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. So Leslie Jones.
Yes. Really funny comedian and actress. She's one of the stars of the new Ghostbusters movie.
And she is, I don't think she's officially a cast member. I think she's also, she's still a supporting player. Is that what they call them?
For what?
SNL.
Oh, I'm not sure.
She is, she's a cast member.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, congratulations, Leslie. That's great. She's been on SNL for several years. And she is starring with who are the other SNL people in the new Ghostbusters film?
You know, I don't watch SNL at all. So what we're going to do is act like I already knew all this stuff.
Yeah.
And use my incredibly quiet keyboard so no one knows I was typing.
Yeah,
we're just bringing it up right here.
That's going to be like super, super stealthy.
I know. Okay, so Kristen Wiig.
Yep, former SNL.
And Melissa McCarthy.
Not SNL, but she's been on SNL.
And Kate McKinnon. Is that right? SNL.
Yeah, that's the other one. Kate McKinnon.
And Leslie Jones.
And Leslie Jones. So you've got an SNL alumnus and then two current SNL people. Anyway, Leslie, who is an African-American, has quit Twitter yesterday due to the onslaught of racist and misogynist trolling she was being barraged with on Twitter.
That's just absolutely horrible and just infuriates me on many levels.
Yeah, well, I got no truck whatsoever with the misogynist out there talking about how casting women in the Ghostbusters role is somehow ruining their childhood.
You know, if this is what it takes to ruin your childhood, you need a therapist.
Well, yeah, and
I'm not saying that in a jerk way. I mean, seriously, there's something out of balance and really fragile here that needs to be addressed.
I mean, and I don't even understand. I mean, like I understand that reaction, but it it sort of implies that they actually have any basis whatsoever to be upset in the first place.
And they don't.
And they don't, in my opinion. I mean, who cares? Anyway, whatever. By the way, I intend to go see this movie. I'm not a big movie goer because I only solely because I seldom ever get around to doing it.
I enjoy going to movies a lot.
Look, I haven't seen Titanic. I haven't seen E.T.
What?
I haven't seen E.T.
Oh my!
I haven't seen E.T. Believe it or not, I have not seen E.T. I didn't see Goonies. I think I may have seen Goonies on VHS or part of it on VHS. I just don't get around to watching
movies. I don't
even
know who you are.
I'm going to go see Ghostbusters.
Good, because it looks like a really fun movie.
Because I've heard good things about it, but also because the trolls just bother me. And Miss Jones left Twitter. I hope that she comes back. But she had some 250,000 followers, 250,000 followers, which is quite an accomplishment.
Yeah.
And she said, quote, "I leave Twitter tonight with tears and a very sad heart. All this because I did a movie. You can hate the movie, but the blank I got today, ... wrong." Is that actually only 140 characters?
The fact that that's what you keyed in on, Brian. Anyhow,
it's five characters over. How does she? Anyway, she must not have been concerned about the fact that people would have to click through.
Now, Brian, what you're assuming is that she posted this comment on Twitter.
She did. She did. Well, yeah, it's not an assumption.
Okay.
It's actually not.
All right.
It's a little thing I like to call knowledge.
You and your crazy knowledge.
Let's be pedantic. So anyway, so she was being hammered by racists. Like, one of the things someone said was, your Ghostbusters isn't the first to have an ape in it.
That is so uncalled for on every level.
It's just filthy disgusting. So here's what we're really talking about. Twitter announced today that they were going to be more aggressive in suspending accounts that were harassing people.
Please excuse me if I don't get overly excited, because Twitter has a long history of completely failing at doing this, even when they say they are.
Well, yeah, it's true. And that's sort of like just made me have. So my first reaction is, how do you solve this?
Well, like, you start by actually having some level of enforcement. Okay, so I'm going to use Gamergate as an example. The threats, the violent threats that people were getting through Twitter during Gamergate, where Twitter's response was, we don't see any violation. I mean, it was appalling, embarrassing, and completely inappropriate. And Twitter consistently said, yeah, we're not seeing any problem here. People get rape threats. Like seriously, they get rape threats on Twitter.
And
death threats. And Twitter's response.
And threats against their family.
Yeah. And Twitter's response consistently has been, yeah, we don't see any violation here.
Well, I think that Twitter did suspend some accounts that did the direct rape threats and death threats.
Yeah, well.
It's the other forms of harassment that become. Because, all right, so first of all, you've got like free speech issues, although Twitter is kind of a public square. Mm-hmm. It's definitely so the which I'm going to be super embarrassed. Which amendment deals with free speech? It's the First Amendment.
Freedom of speech.
Thank you. Goodness gracious. Can we just delete that out?
Sure. It's already gone.
Excellent. Thank you. The First Amendment that guarantees freedom of expression deals with the public square.
Mm-hmm.
In private settings, constitutional protections don't necessarily apply.
Right. And also,
I can censor what you comment on TMO. If you're gonna go and you're gonna make a bunch of racist, misogynist comments at the Mac Observer, I get to delete them.
Right. Okay. Now here's an important distinction. The government can censor, the individual person cannot. Meaning, if the government stops you from saying something, that's censoring. If I stop you from saying something, that's just me stopping you from saying something.
Well,
and yeah, the Constitution does not protect you from me not wanting you to say something, as opposed to the government not wanting you to say something.
There's the public square versus the private sector there, right? You don't have the right to put tape over my mouth.
No, that's a totally different thing.
At a protest.
Right.
Because you don't care for my stance on, you know, whatever.
Right. But if we use the Mac Observer example that you presented, anything anyone puts on Mac Observer, we can edit or block it in any way we see fit, and we are not violating anyone's rights.
Right.
Because we're not the government.
Right, because we're not the government. So there's free speech, but then there's free speech. And you know, the problem is that what do you block? Because if I say to someone on Twitter, you're ugly, is that harassment? Or am I just a douchebag?
It depends on the context. And this is where it gets difficult for social networks.
Yes, it's incredibly difficult for social networks. And that's my problem. How is Twitter supposed to solve this problem? And this is one reason why trolls and racist and bigots of all sorts have so much success on the internet, because not only do you have you have anonymity a lot of times protecting people, but you've also there's no repercussions, right? But then you also have the how do you stop it and what do you stop? I mean, like, for instance, Lena Dunham, actress.
Mm-hmm.
She left Twitter. I'm a fan of Lena. I think she is smart, funny, creative, extremely talented. I like Lena. I am a Lena fan. She left Twitter because she hired someone to tweet for her because Twitter was no longer a quote unquote safe space for her. Well, I, at the age of 50, don't have much empathy for the whole concept of a safe space in the first place. I think that's millennial nonsense.
How can you be 50 with as good looking as you are?
To me, it's millennial nonsense. To millennials, of course, it's a thing. You know, they believe that they should have safe spaces. I don't really think that that's how reality works. But whatever, you know, different times, different places.
Sure.
This is one area where I disagree with Ms. Dunham. But there's a difference. There's a huge difference between something being a so-called safe space and then people getting rape and death threats. Or, you know, people. So, like, what constitutes harassment? It's such a hard, you know, it can be a slippery slope for mm-hmm. social networks to try to censor and modify, moderate. Because, you know, just. How much protection from other people's opinions are we entitled to? That's the hard part. And, like, I think that there's a clear line that the vast majority of us would see, for instance, rapes and death threats,
mm-hmm.
right? Threatening your family, threatening to even dox someone, right? That's mm-hmm. where you release a personal documentation about them. Most of us would identify that as not acceptable, not allowable, something that should be stopped. But, you know, if I call you stupid, if you say that an article I wrote was plagiarized, that's another topic of the today, right? You're expressing an opinion. I might be offended by that opinion. Am I entitled to not be, am I entitled to from protection from that offense? I don't think so.
Yeah, it's yeah.
And then you've got libel and slander to, you know, to throw in there as well. When someone slanders you, you can, you know, you can generally speaking sue them. When someone libels you, you can sue them.
Mm-hmm. And you know, and then it's up to them to prove that they weren't actually making up bad things about you, that that's actually what you are or who you are or what you did. But I'm going to go down a rabbit hole there. But
okay.
No, I'm stopping myself from doing that because
okay.
Because it just won't help the discussion. But yeah, it's a very difficult slope to or balancing act. And there are many times when you can look at a tweet and know beyond the shadow of a doubt that this is something that ought to have been considered a violation of Twitter's policies. And yet Twitter's response was invariably, no, we don't see any problem here. And no one could understand why Twitter was responding that way. And there are other times, of course, where it's a lot more vague. So anyhow, my point is that Twitter is saying now that they are getting more serious about this. And I'm glad that they're saying this. But
yeah, for you,
I am very skeptical.
Yeah, the proof will be in the pudding.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel really bad for Leslie Jones because she's really funny. She's an awesome person. And the new Ghostbusters movie looks really great. And I've heard so many good things about it. And she deserves to be enjoying this time and just having fun. And instead, she's having to deal with crap like this. And ultimately had to choose to leave Twitter because of it. That's a really crappy thing to do to someone.
Well, to be fair, she chose to leave Twitter. So, you know, she already has to leave Twitter.
She chose to leave Twitter.
I'm being pedantic there because I don't blame her. Not even a little bit. The harassment she was getting was so far beyond the pale in my personal opinion that it's just not, I mean, yeah, way beyond the pale.
Yep. Completely inappropriate.
Yeah, and I don't blame her for her choice at all. I was just being pedantic, mostly.
As one does.
As Brian does.
That one. Yeah, that one. Brian. That's the one.
So, yeah, you know, good luck to Twitter dealing with this. Good luck to Facebook dealing with this. I mean, this is something that affects every single social network, any kind of social gathering, especially where anonymity protects the idiots.
Yeah.
You know, and doesn't protect the rest of us. I remember the last time we wrote anything about, oh goodness, it was some kind of Twitter harassment. It might have been a Gamergate story. I forget what it was. It was only a few months ago, but I was immediately subjected to two or three people sending me. Insulting pro Gamergate tweets.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, you know, and I can't imagine what, especially the women who have been directly subjected to abuse on this topic. I can't even imagine what they've gone through.
No, it's horrible. And completely inappropriate, totally unacceptable. And
yep.
I think I'm doing a very good job right now of containing the absolute anger I have at people that do those sorts of things.
Yes. Yes. So if you now we realize. The majority of our listeners probably have at least some level of empathy for what we're saying because we've weeded you out otherwise.
Yeah, I think it's just been a natural selection thing.
Yeah, exactly. There are probably some who maybe disagree with at least some of what we're saying. But if you're not among them, go see Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to going to see this movie. It looks like so much fun.
Be aware, by the way, that the haters have been conducting a campaign to skew Rotten Tomatoes and other sources like, you know, IMDb to skew reviews towards as low as possible because they're so angry that women were cast in the role of the Ghostbusters.
That's just crazy. I heard a, and I guess I know we're out of time, but I'm going to share this with you anyhow. So I heard a thing today where someone said, but you realize the Ghostbusters are all Mary Sues, and Mary Sue being a character that just seems to have exactly the right skills to do exactly the right thing, to be the hero. And it's just not believable.
An idealized and seemingly perfect fictional character, a young or low-ranked person who saves the day through unrealistic abilities. Often this character is recognized as an author insert or wish fulfillment. That's the important part.
Right. Okay. So then the follow-up to the Ghostbusters being seen as Mary Sue's was, how could Peter Venkman possibly have gotten a PhD? And I'm like, you know what? They're right. They are Mary Sue's, but it's okay. I loved the movie when it came out. And
a guy would be a Gary Stu, by the way.
Oh, is that what they're calling him? I just thought everyone was a Mary Sue.
No, women are Mary Sue's and guys are Gary Stu's.
All right. Well, I'm going to call all of them Mary Sue's because I'm a rebel like that.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. Well, and on that note, I'm going to hit the button that makes music happen. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.